Good morning again. I wanted to give a shout out to all of our family that's watching online this morning, because we have several that are attending. They're with us, but maybe they're sick or maybe they've got other things going on. So every week we have people attending online, and especially this morning we have extra this morning. And so what I want everybody to do is turn around. There's our camera in the back. Everybody turn around and give a big wave to our church family and say, "Hey, everybody." It was okay. They kind of mumbled it. It was there, I promise you. No, glad that you're online and that you're watching with us. Shout out to Lance watching us from afar as well. Glad that y'all are here with us this morning. What I want you to do is I want you to open up your Bibles to 1 Peter. And we're going to continue our series this morning. And it's in 1 Peter, and we're going to go to chapter 2. First Peter chapter 2. And I love sports. And so I love to watch ESPN, and right now there's just nothing happening. And so there's not much good stuff on TV right now. But I was watching ESPN, and there was this NBA basketball owner, and of course the thing that they're talking about is the coronavirus. And so they ask him, how does this affect your team? What are you worried about or excited for with, you know, according to your team? And even though, listen, I want to preface this by saying, I think with a virus like this, there's sense to take caution, especially if you've got some preceding things going on. I don't want to make light of the situation at all. But sometimes I do think that maybe our country has jumped from point A to point Z really fast, and that God is in the middle of A and Z somewhere, right? Or actually the whole way through. And sometimes we're dealing with people who don't have faith. Some people don't have faith like we do. And because of that, I think God is left out of the equation. And I believe that God is bigger than even this virus. So I don't want to make light of it. And I don't want to, you know, at the same time promote fear. I want to be somewhere in the middle, you know. But Mark Cuban said this quote, and he said, this virus is not about the team. This is bigger than the team. This is about families. This is about the entire nation. And while I don't agree with panicking to a major extent, I do agree with that statement. You know, and I loved what he said. He's saying, this is what you're facing right now. This is bigger than that. That's what 1 Peter is all about. Okay? Peter's saying the same exact thing. What you're going through right now, they're facing suffering, they're facing pain, and they're facing trials. And Peter is saying, this is big. There's something bigger going on than what you're facing right now. And so what I did as I was studying for this, I did something I'd never done through 1 Peter before. I read through it three different times, and each time I focused on a different word to see how many times it was going to be repeated. Now, it wasn't just one word. I focused kind of on a category of words, so let me explain. The first time I read through, I wanted to see how many times Peter was talking about their suffering. So anytime that the word suffering or pain or trial or endure or anything like that would come up, test, any of those words, I would count them. And I found that 34 times in the 5 chapters of 1 Peter, he mentions the suffering or the trials that they're going through. And so that's definitely a focus of the book. But then I went back through, and the second time I read through, I looked for words of eschatology, which is heaven, end times. The Christ will be revealed and all these different things. You'll have an inheritance when Christ returns and all of that I counted next. Souls, angels, anything dealing with the heavenly realms. And in the 5 chapters, I counted 34 for suffering, 42 for heaven and the end times in eschatology. And I was blown away. 5 chapters, 42 times. Yeah, 34. I'm getting my numbers mixed up. 34, suffering. 42, there's something bigger going on here. And so he's pointing on me, saying, I know that you're suffering now, but you need to know that the fight that you're in, even though it feels earthly, is heavenly. What's happening here, there's a lot more going on that's bigger than this moment that you're experiencing now. And so then he gets to, I read through the third time, and I looked for holiness. living right. So anytime it was an action to do something, to think something, to be this way, to do this, to do that, I counted those through the five chapters. And I found that he says this 84 times in five chapters. He's calling them to be holy, to think differently, to do different things, to be obedient to Christ. And so the reason I start with this is because I want you to understand, as you're approaching 1 Peter, I broke it down to three things that are major and essential to this book. One is the trials that they're facing. And he says, that's the fight you're in, is your suffering. 42 times with eschatology, he says, there's a bigger true fight, and this is the hope that you need to hold on to. While you're experiencing this, you need to be focused on heaven. You need to be focused on the things to come, and that's how you'll make it through the suffering that you're facing. And then, what do I do about it? And he says, live holy. Be holy. 84 times. You need to keep living holy and be holy. And so this is a wonderful book. It's a tough book for us. Again, I've told you the whole time, this is most people don't say, my favorite book in the Bible is 1 Peter. And that's because it's a tough book. But man, it's a powerful book. So we're going to get in. We're going to start in chapter 2, verse 1. And we're entering into the holiness section. Chapter 1 and verse 13 all the way through chapter 2 starts that holiness section. So the chapter 1 verses 1 through 12, if you wanted to break this down yourself, just to give you a little context, the first 12 verses is setting up. Here's your suffering. He calls it the fiery trials. And you're refined in all that language. And he says, yes, I know you're hurting. Hang in there. And then he sets up the, hey, this is all for a greater purpose. And now you head to chapter 1, verse 13 through chapter 2, and he heads to, so live holy, therefore. So chapter 2, verse 1 says, so put away all malice, all deceit, and all hypocrisy, and envy, and all slander. Like newborn infants, long for pure spiritual milk, that by it they may grow up into salvation, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. As you come to him, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. So the honor is for you who believe, but for those who do not believe, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone and a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. They stumble because they disobey as they were destined to do, but you are a chosen. Here's our famous passage from 1 Peter. You might not know the whole book of 1 Peter, but you probably knew this verse. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. My lesson is entitled, Grow Up! You ever told your kids that? They're doing something and you're like, stop it, stop it! Would you just grow up? If I could count, if I had a nickel for every time my parents told me that, I would be a rich man. They were just, you know, I would do something silly and something ridiculous, and that was the phrase, grow up. And in a nicer context, Peter is telling his audience, his readers, to do the same thing. And so that's where we're heading in chapter 2, starting at verse 1. We're going to grow up. I got 3 points, and I'll share them with you quickly. Number one, grow continually. Let's start in verse 1 of chapter 2. Grow continually. It starts off this way. So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy, envy and slander. So put away is an interesting word in the Greek. It's used other times in Scripture, but one specific time that it was used that was interesting to me was in Acts chapter 7, and I believe it was verse 58, and it's talking about as Stephen, you remember Stephen? And he was stoned to death. And all of the people who were going to stone them, what did they do with their cloaks? What did they do? they laid them down at his feet. And so they took off their cloaks and they laid them down. And this is that same word, to put away. It's like taking off that garment. And it's the same word used over there in Acts 7:58. And it's this, the last time it was used was associated with evil people who are going to stone Stephen and do all this evil stuff. And he says, they took their cloaks off and put them aside at Saul's feet. And then the other time that this word relates as well with this passage is in Jude, verse 23, where it says, save others by snatching them out of the fire. He's telling them, let me give you context. In Jude, it's an amazing book. You should study it sometime. And in the book of Jude, he's telling his readers, there's false teachers among you, and you're going to have to be careful because they're already there. Imagine coming to church and having God tell you there are false teachers sitting among you right now, and they are evil, and they are doing terrible things to your church, but they look like sheep, but they're wolves on the inside. And so it's that church, they're on the edge of their seats here going, they're sitting in their congregation looking around and going, I thought we were all on the same page, and now I know that there's some who aren't. And so it was a tedious thing. And so he's telling them, look, you still have to love those people, but you have to be careful because you can't go out with your mission to say, I'm going to go out and change the world because, and how many times have you heard teenagers say, oh, I'm with that person or I hang out with those friends because I'm going to lead them to Jesus. I'm the only hope they have. So hopefully one day I'll have an influence on them. That's a great plan, but you have to be careful because how many times have you seen it where that child who comes in and says, I'm going to make a difference for them and bring them to Christ, and all of a sudden, what happens to them? And they're pulled away and they go the opposite way, and a few years later you're going, what happened to my kiddo? They were influenced rather than influencing the other. And so Jude is telling them, you need to take care of your people, but you have to be careful. And that's this context. And in verse 23, we'll start in 22. And have mercy on those who doubt. Save others by snatching them from the fire. To others show mercy. So you show a mercy mixed with fear, hating even the clothing stained by corrupted flesh. And so this is that same mentality. So the reason I show you all of that is because this verb, this word here, to put away in chapter 2 and verse 1 in the Greek, carries all of that imagery with it. Like a dirty garment is cast aside. You take something off because this is corrupted and this is infected and I don't want to get whatever this is. We kind of understand that now. I'm going to take this off and I'm going to have nothing to do with it. So you put it aside completely. This is a word indicating urgency. And then what is he telling? This is what's so interesting. Put aside what? Okay, I get it. I need to take this off. This is going to, I don't want it. I'm going to hate the clothing stained by flesh. But Peter, what do you want me to put aside? And he says, all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander. Now, as I read that, I started thinking, that's not such a bad list. You know? Like that, I mean, yeah, you don't want to do those things, but it could have been a lot worse. I mean, slander and, yeah, hypocrisy, we don't want to be that. And, I mean, we don't want to have malice and be deceitful and those things. But, man, look at the book of Corinthians. Their list was a lot worse, right? And so then I realized, look at chapter 4 and verse 3. I hope you got your Bibles and you're following along this morning. We got a lot of text we're going through. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 3. Look at this list. For the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do. Now, here's what you have to know. Peter is writing to a group of who? Jews or Gentiles? It's Gentiles. There are probably some Jews mixed in, but mostly this is a Gentile written letter. Okay, so he's writing to a bunch of Gentiles and he's saying, in the past, this is how the Gentiles live. Verse 3, for doing what the Gentiles want to do, here's the list, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. So, here's the reason I'm sharing all of this with our point of grow up, grow continually. That list that Peter gives to them initially, all malice, slander, hypocrisy, He's saying, look, you used to do this. Over here in chapter 4, you were involved in all of these horrible things that, can't we all agree that if you're going to weigh them, wouldn't you say, I mean, it's all sin, but at the same time, I don't want to be involved in chapter 4 stuff. And he's saying, this is what's going on with the Gentiles all around you. This is the way that you used to live your lives. This is what you used to be involved in. And I'm thankful that you're no longer doing that, but you still have a ways to go. And I'm not done yet. In chapter 1, looking at the verses earlier, if you'll go to that context, it says to be as holy as I am holy. And that's God saying, you've got to come to my standard. So Peter's saying, you're not there yet. We have a hard time with this. We have this relative righteousness. You remember my illustration, some of you, where I bring people up and one represents God, one represents the world, and one represents Christianity. And sometimes we get focused as Christians looking to the world and saying, at least I'm not that bad. And what Peter is saying, no, don't fall to that trap. You've got a ways to go. You need to keep growing. I'm going to Austin Graduate School, and I'm studying there. And one of my classes, and one of my classmates may actually be here this morning, I'm not sure. Jared, if you're here, shout out to you, man. But one of my classes is with a man named Dr. Mark Shipp, and it's biblical interpretation. In other words, it's just how to study the Bible. When you open it up and you begin to read through, how do I look at context? How do I look at this? And how do I study to get out the meaning of the text? And so that's what this class is on. The interesting thing is that there is a woman in our class who comes every week. She's auditing the course, meaning she's not taking it for credit, and she is 90 years old, and she never misses a class. And it's Dr. Mark Shipp's mom. And every time that he teaches a class, she's there, and she'll come up with her walker, and I love it. I love seeing her there. Now that I know the story, she doesn't look like she's 90. She doesn't act like she's 90. And she, I'm telling you, she's as smart as a, I don't know analogies, a tack, a whip, a something smart. And I love listening to her talk. When she gives a comment, everybody, and by the way, it's a class full of preachers. We can talk. Everybody stops and listens to what she's got to say, because there's a lot of wisdom there. And I love to see it. And so I began to talk to her, and I said, why are you doing this? And I did it in a nicer way than that. But ultimately, that was the question I'm asking. Why are you doing this? And she said, I just love to study, and I love to learn. And I realize, as long as God gives me the strength to be able to make it up here to this class, I'm going to keep doing it. And she said, you know, my memory's not always the best. And sometimes I come in, and she's always got her magnifying glass, and she's like looking, and she's reading. But look, she's not only reading the Bible, she's reading the textbooks that come with this thing. And these are not easy, this is not easy stuff. And she's all in. And I'm going, wow. And she said, I just love to learn, and I don't want to stop until the day I die. And I thought, wow, that's a woman of faith right there. My dad used to tell me when I was growing up, he would say, son, if you see a Bible that's falling apart, it usually belongs to someone who isn't. And I thought, you know, that's really true. And man, you look at her Bible, and it's just all highlighted and just used and stuff. And you just know, man, this is a woman dedicated to God. Grow continually. And that's Peter's trying to tell him, you're not there yet. Keep going. You're never too old to keep studying. But not only do you grow continually, number two, Peter shows us something else here. He says, grow humbly. And that's really important. I get that from this verse. Look at verse 1 again. We'll start over. So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander, like newborn infants who long for pure spiritual milk. You're not growing like a weight trainer is growing. You know, you're not growing like, there's so many different examples that he could have used that would have been so much better. But he says, no, I want you to grow like newborn infants. And I think he did that for a reason, because there's a sense of humility that goes there. And what I keep thinking is this, we don't work out, spiritually speaking here, we don't work out to strike a pose. We work out to change. Let me explain what I mean. There's this story that's around. I have no idea if it's true or not, but it makes a good point. And it's this bodybuilder, and surely you've seen bodybuilders, and they work out, and they have all these muscles all over the place, and they go in, and they you know, striking their poses and stuff. And so this bodybuilder travels to another country, and there's this African tribal leader that's there, and this bodybuilder is visiting this tribe there. And the leader comes out and he says, "Wow, you are strong. What can you do?" And he said, "Well, let me show you." And he started striking all his poses. And he said, "Wow, that's a lot of muscles. What do you do with those muscles?" And he said, "Well, I pose and perform in competitions to win." And the tribal leader said, "Oh, what a waste. What a waste." And I thought, you know, that's true. What a waste. And then, you know, you think about that and apply that to our text here. I think that's exactly what Peter is trying to say. You're not growing like these bodybuilders. You're growing like newborn infants who are genuinely growing, natural state of growth. Some Christians don't work out to grow. They work out to pose. And I hope that that's not us, right? That's our prayers. I don't want to be that. But sometimes I've got to admit, I've been that way before. I don't want that. God forbid that I work out to strike a pose rather than to work out to change, right? That's what we want. But there's some Christians, man, they carry their Bibles, they preach great sermons, man, they show up every Sunday to take the Lord's Supper, and they check the list. Man, they have the most Bible knowledge of anyone in the world. They know all the scriptures, and they can quote it left to right, but they strike a good pose, but they leave their faith in the pew until next Sunday. I don't want to be that kind of Christian, right? I mean, I work out to change. And that's what Peter's trying to tell them. So number one, grow continually. Number two, grow humbly. And number three, grow naturally. It's the natural state of a child as we look at this newborn infant who longs for the pure spiritual milk. That's just the natural thing that children do. Healthy children long for the milk, and they naturally grow. It's just what happens. I was thinking about sunflowers, you know? How many of you like sunflowers? Is that some of y'all's favorite flowers? I mean, I love them. And what's interesting to me is that they follow the sun wherever it goes. And so it's always fun for me to watch and to see where the sunflower's facing, and sure enough, the sun's out that way. You know, and so it's really interesting to see that. And so they follow the sun, and the rays from the sun make them healthy and keep them growing. And so a healthy sunflower is the one that follows the sun. And I thought, you know what? That's the same thing for us as Christians. Now, we're not following the S-U-N. We're following the sun, S-O-N. Hang with me. I know that's just kind of silly, but it's true. As we focus on the sun, as we focus on Jesus, as we focus on Him, it's the natural thing for us to soak up the rays of God, and it will change our lives, and we will naturally grow. Because a lot of times we go, man, I do want to grow. How do I grow? What do I do? You abide in Jesus. You look to Him. You keep your faith looking at God. And that's how you grow. And so here's the problem with this. And here's the problem that Peter is going to continue to address through his book. Growing isn't easy. It hurts. There's something called growing pains. Do you ever feel those as a kid? Especially, like, I believe that, I mean, everybody feels them at some point, but I used to feel them in my legs at night when I would go to sleep, and I was really young. Probably, you know, elementary, I don't know, middle school age, I can't remember. But, man, my legs would just hurt at night. They would ache. And it was, the doctor said, it's growing pains. And it was miserable, and it would happen every night. And so, check this out. Here's how we dealt with this. My dad, I would go, "Dad!" And he would come in, and it'd be late at night, and he'd open up the door. "Yes, son." I said, "My legs are hurting." And he wouldn't even say anything. I love this image of my dad, and he would come into my room, and he would kneel down beside my bed, and he'd pull back the covers, and he'd start to rub my leg. And he'd just sit there, and he would rub, and he would rub, and he would rub. And the friction and the heat that was created would help soothe my leg. And he would do that every night. And then all of a sudden, you'd hear my sister go, "Dad!" And so then he'd go to Jenna's room, and he'd do the same thing. And now what's funny is I've got a brother that's 12 years younger than me, and so he got to do that again 12 years later with, you know, his other son. And so he did the same thing with all three of us, and it did help. But man, those pains, I can't explain them. You just have to experience them. They hurt. And that's the truth with anything in life. When you grow, when you're wanting to perform better, it takes pain to get there. But man, knowing that the end result is 42 times, he tells them, You're working towards this eschaton, heaven. It's coming. Your suffering's worth it. The pain you're feeling's worth it. It makes it so much easier to deal with. You remember our caterpillar friend from last Sunday? If you weren't here, I just talked about a caterpillar and I'm not going to get into that. I talked about a caterpillar last Sunday. I'm going to talk about him again because I found out something new about a caterpillar. Believe it or not, caterpillars, as they are changing into the butterfly, they go into this cocoon, and then they eventually start to break free of this cocoon. Now, that's a process. They don't just, bah, and they're out. I mean, it's a process. And they have to work, and they have to strain, and man, they're just under a lot of pressure and tension to get out of the cocoon. But do you know that scientists have found that if you cut open the cocoon to pull out the butterfly, that to relieve them of that pain and that stress that they're under and that tension they're under, their wings won't have the strength to fly. And so in order for them to fly and to function as they're meant to do, as they're created to do, they have to endure the suffering that comes with opening the cocoon on their own. Man, growth hurts. But Peter's telling them, you've got to grow. And that's going to take you stretching out your wings. It's going to take you fighting through your cocoon. I called it last week the cocoon of pain. Terrence told me that sounds like a band name. I was like, yeah, that's kind of true. But we have to experience the cocoon of pain ourselves, the cocoon of growth. And we're going to have to fight out. And sometimes we look at God. Here's what I want you to understand. And this is the application, not just for this message of growth, but for every message through the book of 1 Peter. Listen, growth hurts. Life is hard. Stresses are real. Trials are evident. Everyone has them and everyone faces them. And it's not just the coronavirus. There's a lot more going on in your lives. And if you knew the stories of everyone just sitting in this room right now or watching online right now, you would be shocked at the pain that people endure every day. And I wish that I could teach a message to you that says that pain will go away. Those things will be healed. This stuff will be fixed. But what Peter is telling you is that God sometimes leaves you in that cocoon because it strengthens you. He allows you to grow because it strengthens you. But that's not the easiest message to take. But here's what I can give you. And here's what Peter's given to his readers as well. You'll be able to fly to new places that you never thought you would reach. You'll be able to see things on a whole new plane, on a whole new field, on a whole new level that you were never able to experience if you would have stayed where you were at, crawling around in the dirt as the caterpillar. And so God is here. He's growing you. He's growing you, and He wants you to grow continually. He wants you to grow humbly, and He wants you to grow naturally. And His promise is, and I'm going to take you out of the pain. His promise is, I'm going to carry you through the pain, and I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And He promises, Romans 8:28, to work all things out for the good of those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. So there's hope because the tomb is empty. That's the message of 1 Peter. I hope this study is meaning as much to you as it is to me, because that's a message that you might not always love to hear, but you always, always need to listen to, isn't it?